Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Madhava Kunya Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Gopi jana vallabha Giri varadhari Giri varadhari Gopi jana vallabha Giri varadhari Yasoda nandana Raja jana jana Yaso janandana braja jana randana Ramuna tira vanachani Ramuna tira vanachani Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paskatyare Satarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita
Welcome to our second session on Find Your Authentic Path. Wow, another artwork. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Wow. This is an extraordinary. I so much appreciate all these thoughtfully prepared garlands.
My dear devotees, today I had a meeting with our physical trainer because I have noted that over the years, in my generation, devotees start to bend forward like this. Their back goes like this and their bellies come forward. I have noted, and I began to ask questions. Is there something which we can do for our posture? And our physical trainer gave me three exercises and said, "And if you do this on a regular basis, you will see how your posture will improve." Now, as much as this makes sense to a Western educated person, practice and you will have results, somehow we exclude this principle when it comes to improving ourselves in a spiritual way, or when it comes to finding our authentic path. And what I wanted to alert you to yesterday was a simple principle, that is, what you practice now, you become later. This very simple and very easy to retain principle is the basis of sadhana, spiritual practice. It is also the basis of finding your true path in life. You have to do certain practices that will help you to discover. Or as the example from yesterday told us, you have to walk a little bit the path, and then the whole path will, by your repeated going in one direction, it will appear. So, to summarize a little bit the wisdom of yesterday, I told you something from the Parama Samhita. I want to translate this now in modern language. There is a certain mindset and certain behaviors that you can adopt that lead you to authenticities. The starting point is get to know yourself. Sit with yourself, introspect, or do what we could call be open to honest feedback from mentors and people who hold a mirror before you. I heard those of you who are parents sometimes tell me that their children hold a mirror before them. All of a sudden, they seem to have the desire to discipline their child, to yell at the child, and perhaps some are so unable to control themselves that they
raise the hand. And then moments later they think, oh no, what did I just do? He or she is a child. But as we all know, children want to test their limits. And if you are not prepared, you will come to your limits. And all of a sudden, the real you, the suppressed you, comes out and you find yourself in very objectionable activities or things. People act like mirrors, not only children, but all types of people. Whenever someone gets on your nerves and brings out a strong reaction, stop thinking, oh, it's they're complaining about them. Try to see, oh my God, this came out, this is inside of me. The mirror showed me something that I thought to forget. So this is an activity you can do that allows you to see yourself. Honest feedback from mentors and people who held a mirror before you. In the category of get to know yourself, there's something else. Watching yourself perform and afterwards assessing the results. This, by the way, is a very spiritual practice that Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us. He says every Ekadasi, you should stop and put your life on pause and then see what went on in your life for the last 14 days or so. This will also lead you to become more authentic. You watch yourself perform and then assess the results. The next thing, mindset and behavior that can lead you to authenticity is remain confident as you move forward in life. You can't become someone else than you already are. That is, you know, don't try to copy someone and lose your own spirit, your own genuine thing. The next thing is, I go a little fast through it, but those who are photograph takers, you are invited to take a photograph. Watch for signs when you try new things. Always try new things. Think a new thought each day. Make a new contact each day. Go somewhere new. You know, don't be satisfied to just remain imprisoned in the old ways of thinking, the old ways of moving. Even if it is scary sometimes. Oh, what will happen in this new unknown territory? Because you might see that in a new situation, a new with a new person, a new contact, something comes out that was hidden to your view. And the last thing I want to say as a mindset and behavior that leads to authenticity is pray and wait patiently. I always feel everything in life can come, I can try to make it happen through my own endeavors, but the good things usually happen not because I wanted it and arranged it, it's given to me. For instance, my birth. I don't remember having chosen my situation. No, I was put into this. Or that I met Srila Prabhupada. It's a gift. I thought when I first saw the devotees, these people are from planet Mars. They are not relevant to what's going on in my life. But still, I have become like that also. Because it was given to me. people, good people whom I met, they were given into my life. They were gifts. So therefore, my dear devotees, I have learned to pray to Krishna, please, my dear Lord, arrange what is best for me. You know best. And then I wait patiently. Sometimes we are so these are activities. You don't search and mindsets. You don't search and then find, but you do these things and then they are given to you. No? Get to know yourself. That's very important, because if you are an illusion of who you are, if you are suffering from a hybris, you know that that hybris. Hybris, do you know this word? It's a self. It's an inflated conception about yourself. You can never come to authenticity. So be a little eager to come to mirror people, to come to older devotees, and ask them, "Can you please tell me what do you see in me?" I have been able to overcome the greatest faith crisis in my life when I asked a senior devotee, please look at me, just look at me, and then tell me what you see. And the senior devotee, he was very senior in realization and in age. He looked at me and talked 2 hours to me in a language I could not understand, because he was not willing to wait for the translator. He was so fired up to tell me. but I understood everything because he was a mirror. You don't need to understand the language of a mirror. It works on you when there is a real mirror person. Don't overthink, act confidently. That was Ghanasyam Priya's point. That's how he opened his point, his lecture yesterday, that if we always don't dare to say what we think, don't acknowledge what we think, because we think it's so bad, it will never be purified. It can never be brought to a next level. Watch for signs when you try new things. We will hear a lot about this very soon. And pray and wait patiently. After all, there is a saying, just when the caterpillar thought the world was over, he became a butterfly. The caterpillar goes into a cocoon. There is darkness or little daylight, I think they see. It dissolves. It's totally dissolves. It's slimy mass inside. The world seems to be over. But then one becomes a butterfly. I have seen this so often, my dear devotees. When you are first, you need to touch the bottom, because then you are truly disillusioned. And then new things can happen. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, first comes deconstruction, then comes construction. Can you understand? First comes deconstruction. You get then the new things come. I want to just, this is more or less a summary. We will get into a serious subject. This is just to put you, to prepare you for this session, which I think is very beautiful. Let's see. I want to end this summary by telling you a new way of thinking, which I would call the bhakti revolution. In the Pandava Sena, I have heard often the word, I have to work to become a better version of myself. Do you recall these statements? The Bhakti revolution has another idea. It's not so much working on your own steam, trying to find your authentic path and your own, but it is something that is awakened by Krishna. See, our authentic path is not something we need to invent. It's a truth we awaken to as we align with our spiritual nature. Let me repeat this because I put a lot into this sentence. Our authentic path is not something we need to invent. Oh, I should become a dentist or yes, it's a little, I know it's not very romantic to become a dentist. And it doesn't sound very authentic. I mean, there's so many dentists. I'm just speaking to the Gujarati in you. You are not a Gujarati, but there may be some cultural influence still there. It's a truth, my dear devotees, which is already there. Your place is already there, waiting for you. But you awaken to this truth when you align to your spiritual nature. What this means is your body, mind, and your words come in one line so that they all point you towards your real spiritual life. You are a spiritualist inside and outside. And the way this translates into the Bhagavad Gita language is a very beautiful Sanskrit verse which I would love to chant with you. It's very beautiful. You will love it. It's Machita Sarva Durgani. Mat prasada tarishyasi, ata chet tvam mahankaran. Yes. Nashros yasi, nashros yasi, vinangshasi. Here Krishna tells us a very, very amazing way to cross over the obstacles in conditioned life, which for instance could be obstacles to finding our authentic path. He says, don't struggle against these obstacles. It's come from another direction. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by your own strengths. Oh no, sorry. I spoke from the old paradigm. This is wrong. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by your own intelligence. Oh sorry, again a mistake. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by the help of your friends. Oh, again, I'm sorry. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditioned life by my grace. I will do it. I will help you. If, however, you do not work in such a consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So finding our authentic path as devotees, I'm speaking to devotees, spiritually interested people and a few skeptics here in the crowd, is in the bhakti way, the bhakti revolution. It's done through becoming aware of Krishna and letting him do something. This is a little bit in total different language what I wanted to communicate yesterday. I've chosen another language and I will now go to today's subject, which I feel is very, very much, it's very much on my mind. My dear devotees, when I personally started Krishna consciousness, I had an inner calling. It was like a voice that came again and again, you know you're not living the life you're meant to. And I began to see signs everywhere. For instance, I would go into a music concert by, and I would ask the main artist, how can you play like this? I'm a violinist. I'm trying to improve my violin playing. But I saw you on the instrument, on your instrument, performing so nice. How can you do? And the artist would say, well, I can't teach you this. You have to read the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita I had heard about, and instruction in spiritual wisdom. I would go through a tunnel, underground tunnel, and all of a sudden I saw a poster of Krishna in one of the displays there. I would go into a shop looking for the new record of Led Zeppelin. And I would look out of the window and I saw monks passing by the window. I thought, my God, this is like in a movie now. What is going on? And I constantly heard this persistent nudges from all over. Carl Gustav Jung would call it synchronicities, that is events that happen outside that tell you a particular message that only in your subjective consciousness makes sense. It was going on. And then I remember I saw the devotees in Hamburg, and I was afraid because I did not want to change my life. It was comfortable. There was a lot of dancing to different tunes, not what we sing now. There was wealth, there was recognition, there was pleasure, and I resisted the inner calling. I tried to run away from it. I remember whenever I saw the devotees doing Harinam in the town in which I was living, I went around in a circle, I would pick up a newspaper from the garbage and sit with my back to the Harinam party, which would be 50 meters across the street, and pretend I was reading while I only listened to the voice of the devotees. One day I remembered I was in a great hurry to catch a train that would bring me to a suburb where my friends were waiting for a rehearsal. We wanted to do a rehearsal. And I ran and ran and ran and ran over a bridge, and I collided with a woman and we both fell on the ground, and when I looked, it was a devotee rubbing the skin. So I helped her up. I was polite, from a good family, and I wanted to quickly run to the train, but the lady looked at me and said, "You are so funny." "What did you just say? You don't know me, isn't it?" "No, I see you. You are picking up a paper from the garbage. Then you sit on a bench facing us with the back and pretending to read the newspaper, the stupid newspaper, but you are only hearing the sound of the kirtan. You're running away from something, and now you want to run away also. You're so funny." Do you think it's very cultured to address someone like that whom you have never met? I recount, Wendy, and now you're more funny. The lady. I was so unnerved, but okay, so you have seen me. I don't know what you are into. It sounds very relevant. What do you recommend? "Well, why don't you buy this magazine?" "Come on," I said. "Now I have to buy something from you." But I bought it, and I read an article by Prabhupada in the magazine, The Peace Formula. And again, I felt that nudging, it had become louder. And I said, "I have to do something about this. Maybe there is something I'm overlooking in my life." My dear devotees, what is an inner calling? We have a definition. Prabhupada used to do this when there was a word and he wanted to be clear that his audience would be on the same page. It's from a dictionary. An inner calling is a strong inner impulse toward a particular course of action, especially when accompanied by, by conviction of divine influence. Should we do this again? An inner calling is a strong inner impulse towards a particular course of action, especially when accompanied by the conviction of a divine influence. Have you ever heard such an inner calling in your life? An inner urging, sometimes loud, sometimes subtle, of a clearly divine or more than human origin. Do you know what this is? I give you a helping hint. What conversation went on in your head before you became a devotee? Perhaps at that time you began at one stage to feel something like, I should become one of them. Let me go to Pandavasena retreat. I've heard about one very highly posted CEO in what is this computer called? Macintosh. Yeah. A huge company. I think. Microsoft. Someone said Microsoft. Yes. And he said, He came once to a temple and he just wanted to see, conversion in action. You know, the Westerners had been converted into, because it could be good for the marketing and the advertising strategy of Macintosh. There was someone leading a kirtan. It happened to be me, by the way. And I saw this arrogant man on the back. He looked like a mosquito. I will describe to you. He looked so unalive. So kirtan was going on very nicely. So I shooted through the whole room. Zoom! I took him by the wrist and I pulled him forward. And he was there surrounded by devotees going, being very enthusiastic. And he said, at that moment, he felt from somewhere, you should reconsider your entire life and you should consider Krishna consciousness as an option. And he was shocked. Now he is a devotee. Devotee, and he's doing many big things in the world, but he has a house and of course children, but he's having a regular devotional sadhana. My dear devotees, I am very much convinced that you all have heard inner voices. Marry him, don't marry him. Should I be more graphic and become to the level of the young Pandavasenas? Please don't force me. intuitions we had, which are always right, but they stop at one stage. And I have seen this very much in the life of our devotees. They have intuitions, callings in the beginning, but after some time they become so busy with activities that they perform that they never ever reflect about their lives and so on, and the inner voice sadly stops calling. Prabhupada spoke about something like this. I want to read to you in one of his verses how Krishna is constantly calling to each single one of us, but how we refuse to listen. Can I read this to you? He, this Krishna, is within our hearts and is not at all inattentive. So that's the Lord very attentively looking to you. His only aim is to deliver us from material life. It is not that he becomes attentive to us only when we offer prayers to him. No, no, no. Even before we offer our prayers, he incessantly tries to deliver us. He's never lazy in regard to our deliverance. Krishna is, in other words, constantly there, my dear devotees. He's attentive to what you need. And if you look at your lives, you will be able, when you look before Krishna consciousness, you will be able to see how there were many incidences, where he moved things in your favor. But although he is constantly trying, we refuse to accept his instructions. Nonetheless, he has not become angry or frustrated with us. Therefore, he is described here as Bhuri Karunaya, unlimitedly merciful in delivering us from this miserable material condition of life and taking us back home, back to Godhead. Amazing purport, no? Would you like to know where to find it? Please make a note. Really, it's one of these purports of Prabhupada where you just think, wow. It's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 3rd chapter, verse number 17. I repeat for you, Srimad Bhagavatam 8:3:17. This is totally in harmony with Krishna's own statements in the Gita about how he is constantly directing us. There is a verse, please chant with me, chant loudly, it will help you to stay attentive. Ishvara,
Ishvara
Sarvabhutanam Hridayeshu
Arjuna Tishtati
Brahmayan Sarvabhutani Yantrarudani Mayaya. The Supreme Lord, my dear everyone, is situated in everyone's heart. O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities. He's directing everyone, even the mosquito, who are seated as on a machine made of material energy. In other words, the Lord is active, he's not passive. And this Lord can be accessed. And here comes my main work in this lecture is I want to convince you that Krishna is not distant, that Krishna is not close. That Krishna is close. I would like to convince you that Krishna speaks to you already now and not only when you are Param Vaishnava. Prabhupada speaks in a very interesting. He talks about a neophyte devotee who has accepted a bona fide spiritual master and who is attached to a movement like ISKCON, but he cannot make any advancement. This sounds like many of us, no? A neophyte devotee, we have a guru, we are attached to some spiritual society, but can't make any progress. Listen what is here with such a person. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization. But if he is still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification, this gets now really of life-deciding importance, is that one always eats pizza. Oh, sorry. I'm very hungry. I have not yet eaten probably. So we are now curious to know, I will give you multiple choices, to find out what is the qualification that God in the heart talks to us, right? because I have not so much time. I will, you know, there's many things coming. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. It's, by the way, the bona fide quote. If you like to look this up because you don't believe me, chapter 10, text 10, purport. I repeat, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 10. Krishna can give you the understanding by which you can come to you. He can talk to you. He does not ignore you. He can call you. He can provide you with an inner calling. He is doing this. Therefore, you must act in such a way that God will call you. Come on. We have provided a thing for you, a quotation for you. How do you know you're receiving a calling? That's something else. Okay, we will go like this. How do you know you are receiving a calling? Are you interested in this subject? Yes. But first of all, you should cry. You should not cry, but you should be ashamed of yourself that somehow or other we are not on the wavelengths where we hear Krishna. I'm talking also about myself. My dear devotees, in Vrindavan, for me, something has happened this year which I consider the greatest gift to me since 40 years. I heard the call of Krishna again. It was very clear. It was unmistakable. And there were many things happening around it which just were not coincidences. So how do you know you are receiving a calling? The first thing is there is a persistent inner pull. You feel again and again an urge to pursue something, even if that doesn't seem logical or practical at first. This inner pull often feels like a seed that is in the heart, and you can't yet see what is the plant, what will come from that, but you know there's something now in my heart, and it will grow, it grows, it grows, it grows. The next thing is you will feel divine nudges. Do you know what is a nudge? Is it an American word only or an English word also? Nudging. A little prompting perhaps? No? What is a nudge, James? You are good in English.
A push.
A gentle push. Your child might nudge you when he wants an ice cream. Gentle. For instance, you may hear or read something that speaks directly to your inner thoughts. Or you may sit with your guru and your guru request you to do something which you already know you should do, and you feel nudged. Prabhupada spoke about these nudges in Mayapur in 76. He said, Krishna is very kind, always. But when he sees that you are very eager to go to him, he calls, and he says it two times, he calls, inner calling, no? Then the next thing that you know there is something going on, an inner calling is, it's a quite certainty beyond doubt. Yeah, sounds right. Yeah, I think I should do that. I've talked to devotees who were not clear about their ashram situation. And then all of a sudden it became clear and they nodded their head. Oh yeah, oh yeah. I've heard about Matajis who tried to obtain children and then went to, it didn't work for biological reasons, and they went to tremendous, you know, there are a few things one can do and try with the medical science, but at one stage they said, it was disciples from me, so they talked in some confidential way, they said, we knew it is not meant for us to have children. We should take care of people. That is our children. And I said, how did this feel when you heard it? Yeah, I knew beyond all doubt it was right. The human being in me cried a few tears, but then there was a certainty beyond a shadow of a doubt. Another sign how you know that you are receiving an inner call. You feel very restless when you ignore it. You just feel restless. The English word which I like best is ill at ease. Do you have this in England? In America, they say ill at ease. If you resist this calling, you might feel a sense of dissatisfaction and unease is also a good word. You might think there's something still missing in my life. And usually, there are persistent reminders happening in your life that keep servicing. All this is a sign of an inner pull. My dear devotees, for me, an inner pull happened, an inner calling happened when I wrote my first book. It was on the Holy Name. You have never seen that book, and you will never see it, because I was so inexpert. You know, I'm a runaway from school, so I'm not like our Keshava Maharaj, highly intelligent. I'm trying, you know, and but you know, I felt inside, you are so convinced about chanting, you should write a book to where you bring your convictions in it. I say, I never write a book. Book writing is not as for people who did not run away from school, you know. But it came back. Oh, I don't have any time. I'm preaching. Please give me peace. But the inner calling was on, and I wrote the pre-book for the Nectarian Ocean of the Holy Name. It was the first run on the Nectarian Ocean of the Holy Name, which is inspired by Harinam Chintamani, and so on. I feel now that there is something missing in my life and in most of the lives of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas in the West. I feel if they could be deeper and make spiritual experiences which tell them they are on the right path, this is important. And in order to facilitate this, we have to activate something in them which is silent. That is, all those things which you do when you practice the third limb of devotional service called smaranam. Yes, the difficult word in our tradition. So I feel this. I'm already active in this, and it comes back again and again. I feel other things, but I don't want to bore you with my life. So this is, these are some indicators that can help you. I want to end here and see if you have any questions so far. I would, in my presentation, I will deal with how do you know that you are living your calling? What happens at that time? And I will bring you in contact with an amazing person who I had met when I was a non-devotee and whom I again met in the Italian mountains in a very, very special situation. And she told me about her inner calling. And it's a very amazing story. You will like. Then I will, and tomorrow I will take you to a workshop that where you will find your inner calling. You know, the mystery of your existence, my dear everyone, lies not in just staying alive and becoming a dentist, but in finding something to live for. That is the calling you have. The calling is not just to stay alive. It is to find something to live for. I'm talking like Keshava Maharaj, I know. Actually, our dear Keshava Maharaj, I have seen your presentation and you know I see them with great appreciation and so on. And I have decided to also use a little technology. Our Keshava Maharaj has inspired this in me. And Gokrishna has done it. Amazing, isn't it? He's very talented. We are becoming influenced by Keshava Maharaj. So, but for now, I just want to see, I'm not sure, does it sit with you what you hear? Are you engaging with the subject? Well, this is not the right way. No, Maharaj, it's so boring. We just look all the time, when is it over? No one will say this. My dear devotees, do you have any questions? I see the man with a very beautiful bird-like voice in the kirtan. You have this. And there was another in the back, yes. Let's, and I see Devi Kumari. Let's start with these three and see.
Maharaj, thank you so much for your class. You spoke about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's principle of first comes destruction.
Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati.
Okay. First comes destruction, then construction.
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about how in that transition from destruction to construction, how we can...
It's deconstruction. Deconstruction and then comes construction. But it's the same, yes. Yes.
So how do we stay focused and going through that transition from going through that journey of deconstruction to construction?
Thank you. This is very, very, very nice. I would say instructions from people we trust help very much, but they will most probably only start to talk when they see that something has been deconstructed. An example of this we find in the sixth canto, where Chitraketu, who in the beginning wanted to have a son like anything, although he was warned that, yes, you can have a son, but this son will cause you heartbreak. You know, but he wanted to go along, and then it happened. He had a son after he had tried so much, and he was happy for some time. But then the son was poisoned, and he became totally distressed. He, in English, you would say he lost it totally. He went through the rooms like an animal. My son. The ministers needed to be do the government. He was a king. He was not capable to do anything, and he was just total. His whole life fell into pieces. But then he met again a saint, Angira Muni and Narada, and there is a purport where Prabhupada said they now began to speak to him. They could not speak to him when he was so much in his mind to have a son, a successor to the throne. That's very important for a king. And when he was so fixed on it, but now where he was disillusioned, they could speak to him. There is a huge body of verses and so on which tell us we only become open to spiritual instruction and the moment when our illusions are destroyed. What helps us to go through this phase, your name is Jagannath Sutta Prabhu, isn't it?
Sure.
Jagannath Sharan, even better. Jagannath Sharan Prabhu. It is painful when we are going through this destruction phase. If it's the real deconstruction. This word is important. Please correct it if you wrote destruction. It's Krishna will not, he will help us that the constructions which we have made, the things which we have built around our hungry egos, that they need to come down. It is at the beginning painful because you don't have anything yet that replaces it. You only face a gaping emptiness in your life when it's the real thing. This emptiness will continue until you reach a certain point, the turning point, and that is when you turn to Krishna and says, I can't do this, solve this on my own, please help. So I can only say, my dear devotees, you save yourself a lot of trouble when you come quickly to this point. Perhaps you should already start praying now so that you are in a habit of praying, that it is not so difficult. But coming to the turning point where deconstruction finishes and a beautiful building appears in your life and is constructed, your joyous ecstatic spiritual life, your safe spiritual life, that is coming when you can turn to Krishna. And Jagannath Charan Prabhu, for this, please read this verse 18:58, become conscious of Krishna, then by my mercy you will cross over the obstacles, not by your own. Thank you. This was an extremely good question. An extremely relevant question, I wanted to say. All questions are good, but this was very relevant. Jagannath Charan, because we know each other, and I'm not sitting here as an official lecturer. Yes, I want to get some content done, but I'm also sitting as someone who is just so happy with the Pandava Senas. I want to say, give you a tip. It really comes from an older brother to a younger brother. I have learned that this turning point to turn to Krishna is not just one time or five times or a few times. If you can come to this turning point every day where you turn to Krishna consciously, then your life is so easy and so trouble-free. And I personally come to this point by reading the Sharanagati prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It is so beautiful how Bhaktivinoda Thakur expresses himself. My dear Lord, I just want to be, no, my dear Vaishnava, I want to be the dog in your house and protect the house, you know. Or when he says, Tsavasya Toma, my Lord, everything moves due to your control. Brahma creates, Shiva destroys, only because of you. No? And I read, usually, now I'm a little bit out of my usual schedule, because in India I did something totally different. I mean, but I read usually every day one song of Sharanagati, and it keeps me always on this point where I'm facing Krishna. If you are poor, I will give you the Lakshmi to buy a Sharanagati book if you read it. When our Jagan, please help me, Janakinath, good. He had cancer, and he came to me and said, Maharaj, I'm properly die. Anything you can tell me? Said, are you a little bit afraid? And he went into his Janakinath. No, it's fine, it's all fine. Janakinath, don't talk like me as if I'm from London. I can see that you're not comfortable with this. Yes, of course, he said. So then, can you say something to me? I said, yes. Read Sharanagati. Give your life in the hands of the Lord. And he told me that this had helped him very much. But it's not only for when you are in such a situation. That's not. Good. Anyone else? There was someone else I saw. Your name is Miss Chaitanya, I believe? Nimai Chandra. Yeah, it is also Chaitanya.
Thank you so much, dear class.
Yeah.
When you were talking about the mindset and behavior that lead towards successful authenticity, one of the points you made is to remain confident, and you can't become someone else other than who you are. And I was wondering if you could elaborate, because sometimes it may be that our mind is also playing tricks. So you're trying to figure out.
Our mind may also
be playing tricks.
Playing tricks.
So it may be that you're trying to remain confident, but maybe you're not sure quite what your authenticity might be, but yet you're influenced maybe by people around you. So you may convince yourself, or your mind may convince yourself, that those are the things. And so you end up kind of following maybe others' nature. So how to differentiate between being confident once you know versus the mind playing a trick, and you're almost starting to follow others because it seems like what they're doing is a popular thing. I'm just wondering if you had anything to help differentiate.
I really think the first starts there in getting to know yourself, sitting with yourself, getting an assessment of yourself. You know what I have learned to do in this regard, because no one, not so many give me feedback because they think he's too German, you know. I sometimes go into do something that Krishna describes in the fifth chapter of the Gita, to look at yourself from outside, you know, the some a wise man knows that while he is acting, only the body acts, but he himself does nothing at all. This is a summary of this point. So I sometimes really stop things that go on, and I go out of the situation and watch myself as neutral video camera would watch. No judging, no hoping, no anything, just watching what is there. And then I see some certain things, and I think the greatest gift of our philosophy in terms of psychological benefit for the people is that we are taught to take a neutral observer position. It's described at some length in the 11th canto. It's called Shakshit Vena. Oh, interesting. My mind wants to eat a pizza. Yeah. Well, it's not so healthy. I had a pizza already for breakfast. And observe neutrally what is there. You have to practice that a little. Whatever it takes to get to know yourself, how you are now, not how you want to become. How you are now is important, because I always say this, if I want this particular dhoti to become clean, I can't wash the dhoti of Abhiram Thakur. I have to wash my own dhoti. So I cannot take to the ways of another person and do what he has to do in life. I need to do what I do. Sometimes simple examples help. So get to know yourself. And for this, my dear devotees, we have the mentorship, not just for this, for many things. But that is one thing that happens in a sincere discussion about spiritual progress. Because sometimes there are things which we cannot see. They need to be mirrored. That's why teenagers go before the mirror when they have an acne problem, and they because they can't see it without a mirror. Sorry, the lecture comes to an end, and I need to speak to the young minds here in some appropriate language. Good. Nimai Chandra. Yes. There was Devi Kumar. Yeah.
It was mainly just to do with how do you differentiate between receiving a form from the Paramatma versus a deep-rooted material desire.
Yeah.
Because the material desire can also give you an inner pull. It can also be restless when you're ignored. And in terms of divine nudges, you might be trying to seek out things to make you think that, oh yes, this is what I should be doing, but it might not necessarily be Krishna.
Yeah. I will give you the most surprising answer, which you will digest, I think, for a whole year. Someone who is more aware about himself knows when it's the mind. But we often resist our psychology. We think it's dirty, it's maya and so on, so that it persists in us. We never dissolve it. There is a saying which I found shocking at first. And God said, love your enemy. And I decided to obey him and love myself. This this can be interpreted in various ways. Here is my interpretation in which I would like to use this quote. We often feel on the co-driver's seat of our life is an enemy, our terrible mind, who wants to pull us in material life. Yes, there are these pulls and pushes in the mind. I'm not saying it's not there. But I'm not agreeing that if you make yourself always your enemy, you will have a peaceful life. You have to understand, what does he want? What does he say persistently? And then you need to find ways, Krishna conscious ways, to treat him. But if you beat him up always, sometimes you need. But always it's not good. What I want to say is, get to know yourself better, and that is done when you look who you are and try to find it and find out and then deal with this. Then only we know when our mind starts to trick. What we see, Devi Kumari, is we see reoccurring patterns of thought. Okay, zik, 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 zik. Okay, when there is this trigger, my mind goes zik, 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 and draws these conclusions. We begin to see how the subtle wiring of us works. And then we get to know, then we can for the first time understand, this is the voice of my mind. And then we can distinguish it from the entirely different sound quality of the voice. It's as different as the voice of, let us say, your best Mataji friend who lives around, who's in such and such street, and the other Mataji who lives in Birmingham. You can discover, they are very different. By the way, your question is a very relevant question. In all spiritual traditions, you need to learn to distinguish the voices, the mind from the voice of the Lord. It's a practice that needs to be done. I can only say the voice of the Lord sounds a little bit like the voice of your guru. That sounds a little bit like the voice of sadhus. It sounds a little bit like the voice of scriptures. And the voice of the mind is usually separate from these causes. Krishna. Keshava Maharaj.
Yes. Thank you so much. This was really useful. Maharaj, could you say something about timing? Because sometimes I find what's just as confusing as hearing your recording is determining when you should follow that in recording.
Yeah, wonderful. Wonderful. Timing. I see our Ganeshyam Priya, and I think if you prepare a little bit your thoughts, you might also like to say something. But let me first say something. When I was a child, my mother said to me, now you need to go alone to the school. I brought you up till now, but you now know the route. And I entrust you in the hands of God. She was a very pious person for some time in her life. Then she became a different So you said the first rule you must know when you cross the road, you must always look to the left, and then you look to the right. You must know in Germany the cars drive on the right side, not on the left side. So when you cross the road, you have to look to the left, and then you see the car which is approaching. This is the first rule. I hope you keep this rule, because there are three roads you need to cross, left and right. This is all for now. I will tell you more later. So I remember at that time in my life, I followed the rules, left and right. But there came another time and more complex situations in my life. Like, there came the time when one grown-up man exposed himself in an inappropriate way before me and made sounds. Now I know what he wanted to do. At that time I was so young and innocent. I did not know. But a voice said to me, kick him between the legs and run. This is very uncultured, I thought. I don't know if my parents would, but I did it and run. And then went to my mother and cried, and my mother then had this person convicted. That was the first time when I followed an intuition, and this intuition, it was on the spot. It needed to be done just now. And all of us know these types of just now intuition. No, don't talk to this person. Go another path. We feel, oh my God, I'm now in a computer program. I know if I keep on watching this video, my regulative principles are not there in this video to be found. Jim, I need to get out. It's an intuition. That's not really an intuition. That's yeah. But if you are not regularly viewing, then you don't know how things develop on the. So. There are immediate intuitions, but then there are very, very, very long-term intuitions, and they need to mature. I would like to give you an example for this, which I heard when I was driving with the car. There was a wonderful devotee. We had wonderful sangha in our car, and she said, when the teacher asked us to draw what we would like to become in the future, I drew, I think she was 11 years old, I drew a door, and there was psychotherapist on it, and then my name, Dr. Yoshi. Yoshi is another, he is another Yoshi, but I don't know if she, her name is Yoshi. Her name. And of course, that is nothing for an 11-year-old girl. That comes later. So there are some decisions, intuitions you need to do immediately, but then there are the bigger, greater things which need you to mature and grow into the situations and to know what is what. I don't know if there is a recipe, but sometimes it's obvious. You are amongst all your wonderful services which you render. I understand you follow. You are on book distribution and inspiring book distribution. So perhaps you know as a book distributor. Sometimes a voice tells you, "Go to this person and give them a book. They will take it." And it's always right when it's that voice. And that's an immediate thing you have to do. You can't wait, you know, he's passing. But then there may be a voice you heard when you were brahmachari, and you thought, well, I should take sannyas. But it needed to mature a little bit. It couldn't be done. And in the same way, there may be a voice now where you feel, oh, in my later life, maybe I should move towards a sacred place more and be more connected. What Srila Prabhupada would always say, I mean, when it was to know the will of God, he said, asked a devotee, superior devotee. That was his, he said this often. Ganesh Yampriya. Yeah, are you here? Yes. Yeah. Yeah?
Nothing
to add? Yeah? Good. So, yes, my dear devotees, the subject matter which we are dealing with here, and which is closing, I want to now say the closing words, is a highly sensitive, highly intriguing, highly spiritual subject, which I feel has not gotten enough importance. I must say, I became very aware of this when I sat for the first time in Christian's lecture. It was in German, about 5 steps of the intuition. Wie nennst du die nochmal? Die 5 Schritte der Intuition, oder?
5 steps
to inner?
Wisdom.
Ich verstehe. Ah, 5 steps to inner wisdom. And you might have remembered some of this. If not, you can ask him if you are interested in this subject. What I found out is that in general, our theology or philosophy is often that we run away from the subject matters that Krishna talks to us. We say, Prabhu, I'm not so advanced. And I think it comes in part from humility, but in part also from laziness, or from overly busy, or for being too comfortable in what we do at the present moment. I think there was a quotation with which I want to end. What? Yeah. Of Srila Prabhupada, which I would like to read with you. So, Prahlad, can you please read along with me, because then it's easier, then it sinks more in. So, Prahlad Maharaj, no, I'm wanting to say silently in your mind, please read. And why are you? You're very joyful. So I'm reading, and you are reading along for better comprehension, right? So Prahlad Maharaj is expecting. When the Lord will call me, that is real mercy. This calling is real mercy. You cannot call God or Krishna. Please come to me and save me. Krishna is not your servant. He does not agree to be your servant. But when he is pleased, he says, he calls you, please come and surrender unto me. I would add in this way, no? He gives you instruction. Therefore we must expect when the master will call me. And now a very famous quotation, but very differently used. Don't try to see God, but act in such a way that God will call you. Please come here. That is wanted. That is bhakti. It's from a lecture in Sita Mayapur. My dear devotees, when we were with Prabhupada, and also, now we find that Prabhupada was both. He He spoke of a direct relationship to Krishna. He said things like, Krishna is your friend, your best friend. But when Prabhupada also saw that we were so immature sometimes and making Krishna almost like our colleague in the on the working place, such a friend, you know, and not being acting appropriately and thinking appropriately, he also said to us, Krishna is very special. Krishna is very, you're dealing with Krishna, be very careful, you know, he said like this. But I think in our spirituality we need to awaken this, what bhakti is. Bhakti means devotion, it's a feeling. And tomorrow I will dare to do something. I will first introduce you to this amazing meeting of someone who followed the calling and who checked all the parameters. And then I will have a workshop where perhaps I will try to lead you into a meditation. I will use elements of a forthcoming book where Ghanasyam Priya has given the title, where found the title, discovered the title. So, and I will do it, I will try to guide you in a way where you very easily and clearly hear what could be your next step, a calling. We will go and make an experiment in the divine arena. We will perhaps do a wake up, James will do. So I will end here. I thank you very much and have a wonderful day. There are many, many nice attractions coming. You know better, Ram Thakur knows better. So I will end here. Hare Krishna, Hare Bo Prabhu, Hare Bo. Thank you.